Everyone, we're opening the work session on Senate Bill 5507, which we started to do yesterday morning, and the chair learned one thing: do not have a break in the middle of a work session. So we'll continue working.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, if we have some additional information.
Greg, do you want to come up and talk real quickly about the policy messages on, we're going to do the Division of Finance and Corporate Security.
Thank you.
Before we begin, we want to recognize a special guest, Representative Gardner. Do you have a special guest?
I do, Madam Chair. In honor of National Take Your Child to Work Day.
Yeah, I believe it is.
My daughter Susan's here today, 8 years old, and glad to be out of school for the day.
Hi, Susan.
Good morning, Susan. It's nice to have you here. I think it'd be appropriate if Representative Whit doesn't come in, if you'd like to go up and sit by your dad. Would you like to do that? You could pretend you are a representative like your daddy is.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
The young.
What was that? I missed that.
The young man who was sitting just behind her, who is slinking down in his chair, hoping for all the world that his mother won't embarrass him, is my son Ian.
And fortunately,
Ian, your mother is not the only one that embarrasses their son. My son works for me, and I continually say, "Honey, would you do this?" And when I say it in front of people, he says, "Yes, honey." It's just a mother thing, but we do. We're awfully glad to have you here. We'd like to have you come up and pretend you're a senator if you'd like. Please come up and sit by Senator Duke.
Actually, this is Dad's chair, so.
There's
one right there.
There's one. Yes, if you want to sit over there, Ian. We're glad to have you here. That's right. We don't want to take Robin. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Susan. Ian. Thank you for making the time today to let me explain some information related to the budget that you're going to be considering, and primarily policy package 161. I wanted to thank you for the extra time you took last Thursday to hear our constituents, the stakeholders, come up and support our budget and package 161. And I understand that each of you received letters from Jim McCauley, representing the mortgage bankers, Jim Marquis, representing collection agencies and mortgage brokers, and Paul Cosgrove, representing the consumer finance companies, on our budget and specifically policy package 161. Yesterday, in anticipation...
Excuse me.
Just a matter of curiosity, was the supportive testimony purely spontaneous, or was there any interaction there?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, we contacted each of these people and indicated that there had been expressed some concern about policy package 161, and that the committee may benefit from getting their perspective on those packages. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yesterday, in anticipation of a work session, we distributed letters that we had received from other stakeholders, and based on the same interaction, Robert Banks, an attorney that represents consumers, provided a letter to us that we passed on to you, and we also have letters there from the Investment Company Institute, a securities entity that we regulate. The chair of the securities section of the Oregon State Bar, and also a letter from Gene Poitras of the Credit Union Association of Oregon, and Tom Perrick of the Oregon Bankers Association. In addition to those letters of support, we provided you some additional information, and one of those is a white paper explanation, actually, that was developed in response to Representative Butler's request that he receive a little more information on what these positions do, and that's provided in the material that you have on the back of that. If you have it, is a graphic that I just like to touch on, and I have some additional copies if by chance it's buried in your materials. And to explain this, I'll give you just a brief background on what our intent was. As Mary Neidig, the director of our department, indicated on the first day of our testimony before you, she went over our strategic plan and some of our initiatives that included customer service, regulatory reform, workforce development, and technology. And we felt within the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities that to effectively address those areas, that we really needed to look at our current structure. And that's what that graphic on the back of that document really shows, is what the current structure was and then the proposed structure. And I'd like to also clarify that it's not often that we come before you with any real history on something that we're proposing, because it's something that we're trying to guess will happen in the future. And this, in this particular instance, we aren't coming before you prospectively. We're coming before you with some experience, because we initiated this structure with the senior policy analyst in June of this year. And I've also attached a memo from Jim Harlan to me, and then also attached at the end of that is from Jim Kruger, the non-depository program manager, and it lists some of the outcomes, the successes that we have achieved over the last 9 months with this structure. The graphic indicates what the structure was, with an administrator, a deputy administrator, and an administrative services manager. And what we were doing effectively, we were because of the workload, we were putting additional administrative responsibilities on Jim Kruger as the administrative services manager, to not only manage 9 program areas, but deal with personnel and operations issues and budget-related issues for planning and execution. In the deputy administrator area, the outline is there of what we were, the distribution of duties. The arrow indicates all of the things that we hope to address to under the proposed structure. And as you can see, it really affords an organizational change that allows Jim Kruger to be actually a manager of 9 program areas and address those issues, rather than having to also take on operational and budget issues of the division. The policy analyst has been a significant success for the division so far. Some of the things addressed in the memo from Jim Harlan that I had requested, for example, in rulemaking and in responding to our customers quickly, we've had a 38% decrease in the time it takes for a rulemaking from time of hearing to report, because he was able to dedicate more time. Previously, it took an average of 39 days from conclusion of the hearing to deliver a report, and we were able to get 4 reports out in 24 days. We've been able to, we believe, provide better completed staff work with this organizational structure in responding to issues that are coming before this legislative session. For instance, Senate Bill 269, we talked about the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, and the time that we were able to dedicate to assure that we were presenting you with the legislature with a completed staff work. In the area of the non-depository program, Jim was in a situation previously where basically 30 to 45 days behind in his correspondence to our customers. And now he's improved that significantly, and telephone calls that once took a week to return because of the workload are being returned the same day. There are several other examples, and I don't want to take all of your time, but I do want to impress upon you just basically 2 things: that we have the stakeholder support for option package 161, and it's a something that we've initiated, and it is working. Thank you very much for
your
time.
Thank you, Greg. And I would just share with the committee that I've met with Ms. Lincoln earlier and said that probably the committee needed a little more information on this, and that's why you have some of the
and support as well. While you have some of the letters from various folks in the that this agency affects, and I asked them to send them to us. I know we don't usually like to get a lot of extra stuff, but I thought we needed some support. Yes, Senator Duke.
I'm a little confused, Madam Chair. The new chief looks a whole lot different from what the definition of this position that's in the book that you gave us when we started all these hearings. Did you rework this position?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, no. Actually, this graphic was planned to be included to augment the information provided to you in the budget, and in an effort to not inundate you with paperwork, we eliminated it. We decided that what we were asking was for a senior policy analyst. In retrospect, I believe that we should have really focused on that structural element, how this creates a structure change rather than just a one single position and focusing on what that position will do.
I guess I'm surprised that a senior policy advisor, as you describe in the book, is returning customer phone calls. It's just the nature of the job looks very different to me and than what you presented now. Perhaps in response to the negative comments when we talked about it before, but it just looks very different.
Any further discussion? Thank you, Greg.
Thank you very much.
You should have a memo among several others in front of you. Actually, I have the date of April 23rd on it. That might help you find it.
Okay, wait a second.
Madam Chair, did we hear testimony that DAS personnel has gone through the process as with that? I didn't hear that, and I just wondered if that and I wondered if I just missed it while I was sorting through what the positions all do and how they interrelate.
Santish, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the subcommittee. The department requested this position as a limited duration position during the current biennium. I cannot recall if it went through the DAS Human Resources Services Division when we requested that, when we approved this limited duration position. What we do is we look at the overall package, and a lot of times we send it down to the Human Resources Services Division. But on this particular case, I cannot recall that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is Debbie Lincoln, Deputy Director. I believe it did. Because it's at the level it is and because of the kind of position it is, my recollection is that HRSD did review this position. And it sticks in my mind because there are some other reclasses in the same division that we wanted to do that they refused. But this position came out the way we had asked for it, so I'm sure that they did.
Any further questions?
The DAS continues to recommend this as a limited duration position, then.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, no, we are recommending it as a permanent position.
Oh, as a permanent position now.
In the current biennium, this is a limited duration position.
I see.
But no, we're recommending it as a permanent position.
It appears that the base compensation is around $56,000, the base compensation, so it's a fairly high level analyst. When I just look at the and take out the picks and the S&S on this,
Representative Butler, yes, it is a fairly high level position, and I believe that's because at this level they have to hire a person with certain qualifications.
Okay, and then coming back to the Human Resource Services Division from DAS, this the implementation of this person. Excuse me, changes a number of the job responsibilities within the office, and I just wondered what the response was relative to to the Human Resources Division, changing the other, the administrators, the deputy, and the other service managers and so forth, when their positions are changed and their responsibilities, I guess, are changed with the introduction of the senior. And maybe these policies, what's current policy or what's current structure over the far left hand of the schedule was before the limited duration policy was, or the, before the limited duration position of senior policy analyst was pitched in here, and that the proposed structure is what we are actually following today. Is that what we have, Satish?
Representative Butler, at the current moment, we have the proposed structure in place. And I remember before we approved this, I did check with the agency and with people associated with the division just to make sure that there was a need for this position, because this is a fairly high-level position.
So, and final, Madam Chair. So this person is presently returning telephone calls and doing all the other kinds of things to reduce the workload on the administrator, so the administrator spends none of his time now in personnel issues, but the deputy administrator spends the 30% of time in personnel. And I don't see who takes up, I guess, part of those personnel matters must be taken up in this position, because the administrator was spending 30% of his time in personnel, the deputy administrator was spending 30% of his time in personnel, the administrative services manager was spending 15% of their time in personnel, and then when I come over here, I see that the deputy administrator spends 30% of his time in personnel, and the rest of the personnel issues go away. I'm wondering what, that's why I'm just wondering. Maybe these programs managers down here that take up 10% of the personnel issues, maybe that's where is that the shock absorber?
Good morning again, Greg. Can you unravel this?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, Greg Malcasian again, Deputy Administrator. And when we were coming up with these numbers, these were the best guesstimates at the time. I think that since the adoption of this organizational structure and the focused efforts on issues of personnel issues, which is development of staff and operational issues as well, down there you'll see, we've been more effective. And I think that probably 30% now is adequate, but we were having some significant issues. We were having significant turnover, and I think that has settled down in these last 9 months.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make absolutely certain that our Human Resource Services Division is fine with the change, and that probably it sounds like the introduction of a new position maybe took enough shock absorption off of the whole department that the personnel issues may have gotten resolved substantially, but I hope that we haven't just ignored the personnel issues if we had that much time being expended in them before.
Madam Chair, if I may say, I'm pretty sure that the DAS HRSD division did review this position because of the level at which it's being requested.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator?
But the only thing the old DAS would have reviewed it for was to see whether or not the job duties qualified with the classification, right? The new DAS does a whole different kind of review on positions, and I just don't want us to confuse the kind of review that is being done today with the kind of review that this would have gotten back before this package was set forward.
That's right. Their new mission is to evaluate all responsibilities all the way through.
Madam Chair, Representative Duke, this review took place most probably a year back, so I can't remember what methodology they were using.
When we had agency heads working out of class, and we had all kinds of interesting things going on, all approved by DAS. So it's evolving into them becoming more involved in whether or not we need some of these positions.
Madam Chair, would it be appropriate that we ask with the position, depending upon the vote today, the work session, that we encourage DAS in a note that they make certain that the addition of this and or other positions that may be approved in this budget and policy option packages, that they make certain that it not be just examined for class, but also for the structural efficiency as well.
Well, I just felt a budget note coming on. And I would like, Representative Butler, if you wouldn't mind, and Senator Dukes, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, look at me. I'm a no in this position.
Okay.
I think the last thing the state needs at the moment is another state paid employee. I mean, lobbyist, excuse me. We've got plenty of employees, and we need them in some places, but this is a lobbyist position.
Representative Butler, I would appreciate it if you would. I know you can do a one-man subcommittee. Does anyone else want to work with him on this? I think we ought to have a little budget note to be sure that the committee is satisfied with this, since it was reviewed approximately a year ago, and that we do have different DAS criteria.
Madam Chair, I would like to encourage that budget note include a reporting requirement to the emergency board.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you very much. Now, any other further discussion, we'll have LFO's recommendation.
If you'll turn, excuse me, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, if you'll turn to your memo, you'll see that the first recommendation is to approve the revised current service level of $9,309,795 other funds, 61 positions, and 60.75 full-time equivalent positions. This includes the reduction of $57,379 for PERS and standard accessory reductions. You'll find the spreadsheet on page 2 is where you'll find all of the current service level information about midway down the page.
Any discussion with LFO's recommendation? Representative Hayden. Entertain. We'll just have a moment here. Please don't anybody leave so we can have a quorum.
Thank you.
Senator Ryan, right.
Well, I'm a yes on the recommendation.
But you're a no on.
Yeah, the LFO has recommended denial of the package, and I'm an eye on that.
We haven't got there.
Okay.
I agree with her.
Pardon me?
I'll make motions if you want.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
You make motions away and we'll just do what we can to pass.
Do we want to start with page 1,
yes,
I assume?
Yeah, let's start with the current service.
Madam Chair, I move that the committee approve the revised current service level of $9,309,795 other funds, 61 positions, and 60.75 FTE. This includes a reduction of $57,379 for PERS and standard assessment rate reductions.
First, Senator Duke's motion. Any objection or any discussion first? Any objection? If not, so move. Thank you, Senator Dukes.
The next recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office regards Policy Option Package 161, the Senior Policy Analyst, which we just discussed. The LFO recommendation is to deny that policy option package, which would reduce the governor's recommended budget by $161,632 other funds, one position, and one full-time equivalent position.
Senator Dukes.
Madam Chair, I move approval of LFO's recommendation on policy option package 161.
Madam Chair. Discussion.
I may have just missed the preceding half hour's worth of discussion. I thought that we were asking Chair Butler, or Representative Butler, to go forth and bring back additional information about this. And now.
If it was approved. If the position was approved.
Okay.
Senator Dukes has made the motion to recommend that, and yet I had instructed you to do a budget note. So
right.
We have a lot of confusion here.
Okay.
LFO, do you want to straighten out the confusion?
Straighten out the confusion?
Mm-hmm.
The LFO recommendation is to deny the package. If the subcommittee wants to revisit that recommendation, we can suspend making a decision at this point and review that recommendation as well as any potential budget notes and come back to that.
Madam Chair, For me, it's as much a philosophy as anything. All of our agencies have lobbyists, but for the most part, the smaller ones, and that's what I see most of the divisions around here as being, rely upon the division head to come and provide information, as opposed to somebody out actually advocating for things, which the legislature has tried to discourage over time. And so that's why I think that I would much rather have the head of the division out advocating for or out providing information when we need it, rather than have somebody running around advocating. I realize these are other funds, but I tend to treat those cautiously as well. So it's just not something that I tend to think we need to do.
Madam Chair, I understand there's a motion on the table while I just stepped out of the room for a moment, but I just wanted to know from the perspective of legislative fiscal and Department of Administrative Services, Human Resources Services Division, what happens as we move back up through the arrow, as you pierce back through the arrow, do we move back to where we've got people that are spending a third of their time in, you know, high-level positions and personnel issues? If we move back to something that is like that, then I think maybe it deserves some more scrutiny from the Department of Administrative Services. But I just wouldn't want to move to a less effective operation. We were told that you know, now only the deputy administrator has to spend a third of his, or 30% of his time where he was spending a 30% of his time before, and no one else has to really absorb that up for him. So.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Respectfully, it's Senator Dukes that has characterized this as a lobbyist position, and I fuzz up just about as badly as anybody does in talking about having a whole bunch of agency guys out promoting agency points of view. But in the correspondence that we've gotten, there seems to be much less of a flavor of lobbyist and much more of a flavor of an analyst. In looking back over the correspondence that we've gotten, the folks that seem to be paying for this position are the folks that seem to be advocating the retention of it. And my concern is to leave enough time to at least have DAS look at it before simply arbitrarily getting rid of it. If there is, the window is open to have the Department of Administrative Services review it for its sufficiency, I'd be satisfied with that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, may I offer an alternative? This is currently a limited duration position. We could continue this as a limited duration position pending that review and have the agency come back to the emergency board after that review to obtain permanent status.
So,
Madam Chair,
Senator Dukes,
I am happy to withdraw my motion and let the committee do whatever it wants. I'm not going to support a limited duration position either. When you look at the first stuff that they gave us, it says that this person will serve as senior policy advisor to the division administrator, agency director, the governor's office, legislators, and other policy stakeholders on public policy and regulatory issues. And then go and coordinate and manage division legislation at the federal and state level. The stuff they gave us today says that the person is going to do policy development, rulemaking, legislative coordination, policy legal research and analysis in support of their sections, and interdivisional collaboration on other matters. Still, a good chunk of this position is going to be lobbying. And not only lobbying at our level, but lobbying at the federal level. And that's where I say I don't think that we need to create a position to do that, that the head of the division is fully capable of doing that. I mean, Representative Butler raises a good question. If they've got scattered personnel responsibilities now and they ought to have all of that in one place, I don't think you create a new position in order to do that, but it's worth looking at all of the positions, seeing how they pointed out to us that they're pretty diversified. So, I mean, it's up to, but I'm not interested in even going limited duration.
Let's see, Madam Chair, there's a motion on the floor.
Well, I'm willing to withdraw
the motion.
Yeah,
okay. And I was just looking for the actual expenditure within, or the fee and there's no fee increase indicated that maintains this particular position, as I understand it. What is the fee structure? I know that I have the book, and I've been diligently going through the quarterlies back to 1995. And I don't understand some of the interdepartment transfers, and I would like an opportunity. I think you and I meet today at 4 o'clock on that and other issues.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, okay.
Excuse you. Okay. Representative Butler, according to the information from the department, this position is paid for based on percentages of several programs. 30% of the position is paid through the banking and trust program, 10% through the consumer finance program, 10% through the mortgage broker banker program, 20% from the credit union program, and 30% from the security section. So it's split among revenues throughout those areas.
And there's no fee increases in any of those areas, so they must have sufficient and adequate capital on hand.
I believe there is a dollar.
Do we know if it generates a fee increase within the next 4 years?
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, no, it does not. We don't anticipate that it would generate a fee increase.
Madam Chair, Ms. Lamont has made a suggestion which I think is merits further discussion, and that is that we would hold the position right now. I hesitate to see the shock absorber come back to a position where personnel are scattered all over the board, personnel supervision are scattered all over the board. I believe that Ms. Lamont's suggestion that we've maintained this person as a limited duration position until such time as we can have assurance from DAS, Human Resource Services Division, and the other folks that this is working, and not as a lobbyist. I mean, that it's working for the industry, and the industry is satisfied, as well as the Human Resources Division is satisfied that it does take up the shock with regard to the balance of the administrator and deputy administrator's positions who are scattered all over the board, and leaving this position in, budgeting it for, I don't know whether the budget would be for 1 year of the biennium or both years of the biennium, but certainly they can come back to the E-Board if we budget it for 1 year. And they can ask for, they can justify it early on enough if it is in fact justifiable to the E-Board and make their pitch for it, and then ask for the fees to be from other sources to continue on with it as a limited duration, or to actually authorize it at that point. And Senator Dukes, I think that would be probably a compromise, but I don't know whether you're going to accept that kind of a proposal.
Madam Chair, this is, I guess, one that I've come to feel fairly strongly about, probably from the first time I heard about it. I can fully understand why the industry would want a lobbyist within the agency, especially when we lobbied at the federal level. And that makes perfect sense to me. It just doesn't make sense to me as a legislator.
I think I understood and appreciate your point from the very beginning. So I think what we'll do is have Representative.
Madam Chair, I just have a process question for the analyst. If this position does not require a fee increase in order to fund it, if there are in fact excess funds available to the agency, would following legislative fiscal advice and not funding this position result in a fee decrease to the industry?
I would not believe so, Representative.
And why not, if there's excess money?
Representative Hayden, I know that there is especially excess money in the security section of the division. And I believe as that excess revenue fluctuates, I don't believe there's any changes to those fees.
Members of the committee, staff, there is no change to the fees. Was that the question?
The question was, if
based on how the expenditures fluctuate in the in the division, do the fees go up and down? And my comment was, I know at least in the security section that there's often excess fees or often excess revenues, and the fees aren't adjusted because of those excess revenues.
Madam Chair, staff, the fees do fluctuate. Certain fees, such as securities, we have excess, and those fees are, that excess is transmitted to the general fund, or transferred to the general fund, any excess. And there's a certain amount of flexibility built in, which really is analyzed ultimately through the ending balance of each fund, and adjustments are made.
If in fact the fees are not dedicated to the purpose for which they're intended, if in fact they are general fund revenue, why is that?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, the statute specifically addresses securities revenues at this time, that any excess beyond that necessary to regulate the securities function, that chapter of law, will be transferred to the general fund, I believe, on a quarterly basis.
Statute or administrative rule?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, it's statute.
I think that Ms. Lincoln has something to say. What I'd like to do is, I think LFO has a recommendation and we'll get the concerns answered.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to clarify the nature of this position. It's not a lobbyist. This person has been on board for a year. He's not registered as a lobbyist. He has not been in this building all session. What this person does, I know it says he works with legislation. What he does is analyze that legislation, implement it, help up, set up the implementation, help coordinate the work between agencies that we need to deal with. And an example is the Gramm-Leach-Bliley bill, the federal financial bill that brought together securities, banking, and insurance. It's a huge, huge impact on all those industries in this state and across the country, and this person has been the one to work not only with our Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, but also in our insurance division to figure out what impact that has on our industries, to work with the industry groups to be sure that implementation is smooth, to coordinate with the insurance companies and so forth. It's that level of analysis. The person who's in it right now is a lawyer. We probably would continue any person in there to have a strong, strong legal background. The complexities of the securities, the banking industries, the insurance industries, and some of the other non-financial industries that we regulate are such that in this division more than others, we very much need high-level legal analysis ability and the ability to talk and think at that level. But this person is definitely not a lobbyist, and I guarantee that he will never be lobbying.
I think what I'm going to do is ask Representative Butler to make a motion, if he's comfortable with that, to move the package with the recommendation that Rob is going to share with us that will be in the budget note.
My recommendation, and I don't know that solves this problem, but my recommendation would be, because of the level of concern about what this position does, about how it interacts with the remainder of the management within the division, that we request Human Resources Division to do a review of the division and the structures and the management responsibilities within that division, and that the position not be made permanent, that is, that it continue as a limited duration position until that evaluation is reported to the emergency board. My recommendation would be to leave the funding as it is currently requested, and that if, in fact, after that review, the emergency board continues to have concerns, the emergency board can then direct that the position not be filled and the limitation not be used.
Representative Butler, are you comfortable with that?
Madam Chair, I'm prepared to make that as a motion that we do continue in the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the senior policy analyst, as a limited duration position, and that limited duration position that the department continue, and the department and the division will immediately then commence a study through the DAS HRSD to determine the effectiveness and efficiency of maintaining such senior policy analyst as to what that position does, how that position interacts within the agency, and that they review and evaluate the agency's positions relative to these top positions as a whole, and that they report then back to the immediate to the emergency board probably
very early. I would
November, not later than November of this year, November 2011, emergency board would be my recommendation.
And that, so in other words, to accept policy option package 161
with
those,
that proviso.
One other suggestion, and Senator Dukes, let me see if this addresses your concern. We could make a statement in the budget report that the department has promised or committed on the record that this position will not lobby.
And that's,
I don't know if that helps. I'm just throwing that out as an option.
Well, and Ms. Lincoln has stated on the record that this is not a lobbyist position. And I think that in the report from DAS, I would appreciate it if they would, well, maybe the emergency board explain to us that that is not the case. Everyone's heard Representative Butler's motion. Discussion, Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair and Larry, now, as I understand it, DAS reviews positions to see if the job description fit the salaries and various things like that. Will this review that we're asking for be more in depth and really get down to the meat of the subject as to whether this position is really necessary and what its mission is? Not whether this person fits the position, but whether the position itself is of importance,
Madam Chair,
significant importance.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, my intention would be that the Human Resource Services Division would come back and not just review the position, but evaluate the entire agency, the hierarchy of the agency, to determine whether or not this position is really where it ought to be. A few moments ago, I mentioned that the base salary here is $56,000. Now I find out this is a fully qualified attorney. I don't know how many fully qualified attorneys you find for $56,000, and whether or not this is just a, I guess I can use this term in a banking and financial context, a teaser rate or not. Sometimes we have those on loans. I hope we don't have those on policy option packages. So I the concern that I have is I would like the evaluation to be not just of a position, not just of a singular position, but with regard to the agency and that.
And to answer Representative Hayden's question, the DAS IRMD, the DAS Human Resources Division has been requested by legislators before to conduct evaluations that are considerably broader than just the classification, but to look at the classification within the context of an agency's management structure, within the context of the mission of the agency. So I think that what we are asking them to do is well within the scope of what they're capable of doing.
Any further discussion on the motion? Any objection? Senator Dukes?
I do, Madam Chair. I would fully support the evaluation. I think that you know, may be a good idea. Having taken a look before at who does what in this division, I can't tell you that I think they should, you know, they're doing the right thing, so they're not doing the right thing. But bringing that in is always, it can always be helpful. And so I support that. Continuing the same position that I believe is not a worthwhile position in there, and especially with statements that go along with it that say things like, well, we'll have to ask decide whether it's a worthwhile position or not, when our own staff has looked it over and said it isn't something we should pursue. And on top of all of that, then we find out that if we don't do it, the money would go into the general fund. So, I mean, none of that stacks up to me to say that this is a good thing to do.
Okay.
Hayden.
Chair Clark, I'm a member of the subcommittee. So you know that my primary concerns and my reasons for denying the position are reflective of what the committee has discussed, and not necessarily that it's not a worthwhile position, but that how does it fit in the context of the division as a whole? How does that fit in with all the managers? The display we have only shows a portion of the managers in the division. How do the other managers fit into that overall role in terms of both policy and personnel issues, and how are those duties that are laid out on that chart? And to me, it was not real clear where those people fell and how those duties were distributed and if that was effective or not. And my impression from the agency was that there was someone available to put in this position, and they were able to give this thing a shot, and it's working very well. But I'm not convinced that that any other alternatives were really explored or looked at. That was my impression, and it could be wrong. But that's what my recommendation is based on.
Thank you. Robin, do you have any comments?
No, I agree with Lori, and I both went over the staffing, the management structure in the division, and we're not convinced that there was a need for that additional position. Again, you know, we would be happy to amend our recommendation for a review, but those were the concerns that we had and continue to have.
Do you feel that what we've said with your comments on the budget note and with DAS reviewing this, like the motion that was stated before us, that there will be enough examination of this policy option package and what's going on here?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when there is a budget note that directs something along these lines, as I have done with other agencies, I will meet with staff before they undertake the review to make sure that they understand what it is we are looking for. I have done this with other agencies. I have sometimes gotten back information that was, from my perception, inadequate, and have requested them to continue with their review. So the answer to your question is yes, we would make sure that happened.
I'll just share with the committee that we will finish this division, and then we will do a work session on the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, and then we will take public testimony on any bills that anyone wants to testify on, Senate Bill 5507 and Senate Bill 304, and then we'll go into a public hearing on the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business, if we can get that far, which I hope we can. So we.
Madam Chair, may I make one more observation? Maybe that will help to get this budget moved at this time. When we are done with the work sessions on all of these individual budgets, we will come back to the budget bill for the agency. The budget bill for the agency has one line item for all of these divisions.
And that'll all be added together.
It will all be added together. What I am saying is that if, in fact, additional information becomes available between now and when we do the final work session, that we do have the opportunity to revisit any of the decisions that you have made, because we haven't made any absolute final action until we pass that bill out of subcommittee.
Mm-hmm. So any of these divisions can be.
Right.
I think the committee understands that.
Although, editorial comment, I would certainly hope you don't, unless you have to revisit any of these divisions.
Well, yeah. Lots of times there is information that is additional that helps all of us. So. Representative Butler, if you will withdraw your motion temporarily, and we will move on to approve or to discuss policy option package 162.
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion relative to the senior policy analyst review and evaluation.
Lori?
Chair Palmer, members of the subcommittee, the next recommendation is on policy option package 162. The LFO recommendation is to approve this policy option package, the Mortgage Bank of Consumer Education package, in the amount of $266,634 other funds, two positions, and two full-time equivalencies. Direct the department to report to the emergency board prior to January 2003 on progress made in industry oversight and consumer education as a result of these positions. Encourage the department to work with other organizations to educate and assist consumers.
Thank you, Lori. Any further discussion on LFO recommendations on package 162?
Madam Chair, I move LFO recommendations on policy options package 162.
Discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
The next recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is to approve a reduction of $1,689, 1%, in out-of-state travel line items.
Butler. Madam Chair, I move the recommendations of LFO relative to the 1% out-of-state travel.
Representative Butler's motion is before us. Any discussion? Any objection?
What is $160,000 in out-of-state travel?
$1,689.
No, no. Total budget.
$170,000.
It just seems like a lot of money.
Well,
just an observation.
A very astute observation.
Any further discussion? Any objection? Not so moved. Representative Butler, well, we can't go there. Okay. What we will do for now is can we close the work session on this and pick up the Oregon medical insurance?
I'm wondering if the committee doesn't want to just go ahead and move the LFO recommendations on this budget at this time, with the understanding that we can revisit this.
You don't know?
Yes.
Oh, I did not.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, I did not.
That's why, okay. Madam Chair, I was suggesting we move the LFO recommendation because Senator Hannon already indicated he was a no.
Oh, I did not get that information. Okay.
Madam Chair, shall I make that motion?
Yes, please do. Well, we need Senator Duke back in here for a quorum before we can make a motion. Sorry, I did not understand.
He was leaning over telling you, and I thought, no lobbyists. I apologize.
Okay, let's see if we can get Senator Dukes back in here, and we'll get this budget adopted with LFO's recommendations. Motion from you to adopt LFO recommendations.
Madam Chair, relative to policy option package 161, legislative fiscal recommendation is that this policy option package be denied. I move that we go ahead and deny it. Except for recommendation.
Discussion? Any objection? So moved.
Madam Chair, I now move that we approve the budget of relative to Senate Bill 5507, that portion which deals with the DCBS, Division of Finance and Consumer and Corporate Securities budget, at a total of $9,574,740. Of other funds, 63 positions and 62.75 FTE.
You heard the motion before us. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Just a comment. It seems to me, as a matter of principle and philosophy, that when an agency has excess funds, that are other funds, that are fee-generated funds, that instead of those funds flowing to the general fund, that they should return to the people who paid the fees, and beyond that, back to the consumer that ultimately pays all fees. I'm a little uncomfortable with the fact that we are generating general funds under the guise of fees, which should be dedicated. I know that we're only talking pennies per fee payer here, but still, it's a principle.
I think you make a good point, Representative Hayden, and most statutes, I believe, require an adjustment of fees if there's more collected than is needed. And if you'd like to be a one-man subcommittee to bring back any information and find out if that's applicable in this situation,
It would be nice information to have for this committee.
I bet there's a bill out there that you could modify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Other than that, I'm going to help you.
Got lots of time for that. I'll be happy to.
Appreciate that very much. Any objection to the motion before us? Not. So moved. We will now close the work session on Senate Bill 5507 on the Division of Finance and Public Security and open a work session on Senate Bill 5507 for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. Lori.
Chair Carney, members of the subcommittee, you'll find another memo in front of you dated April 26th. If you take a look at the number one item, which is Oregon Medical Insurance Pool on the memo, the follow-up information on the spreadsheet is on page 2 of the spreadsheet, if you want to take a look at that as well. The first recommendation from the... The first recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is to approve the revised current service level of 942,367 other funds, 5 positions, and 5 FTE. This includes a reduction of $4,672 for PERS and standard assessment rate reduction.
Larry, don't worry about it. We owe the piggy bank a lot of money this morning.
I'm sorry.
That's all there is to it. I think that's what I'm going to have to do, too. I'm sorry. And you say, when you say, I beg your pardon, Madam Chairman, when Lori says page 2.
Page 2 of the spreadsheet.
Of the spreadsheet.
Page 2 of 8.
Okay. Thank you.
Which is attached. And you see the current service level figures right there about a quarter way down the page.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve LFO's recommendation as to the... current service level on the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool budget recommendation.
You've heard Representative Butler's motion. Any discussion on LFO's recommendation in the motion before it? Any objection? Not so moved.
The next recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is also on that same page if you want to follow along the spreadsheet. It's to approve policy option package 211, decision support, in the amount of $110,210 other funds, 1 position, and 1 FTE.
Lori, can you just put in
your time? Refresh with that. This is the position that would assist the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool with all that data they talked about yesterday, that big pile of data, and trying to get that information to something they can work with.
And we talked about the also...
talk about what DAS's role might be in working with that, and it sounds like it's pretty much a position that's pretty unique and tailored to what the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool does.
And in our work book, this particular budget was on page
102.
102, thank you.
In light of trying to help Representative Butler out, I can move policy option package number 211, the LFO recommendation. I'm glad to help, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Gardner. We appreciate your motion. Representative Butler, did you have anything further you want to discuss on that?
Just as I want to absolutely concur with our House Minority Leader and say I'm holding the court.
All right.
Thank you both. Any further
I'm
discussion?
I'm marking it down on my calendar.
The committee is complete agreement. Any objections to the motion by Representative Gardner? Not so moved.
The next recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is to approve policy option package 212, contract compliance officer, in the amount of $123,314 other funds, 1 position, and 1 FTE. This is a position that would help monitor contract compliance with the third-party administrator for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool.
Madam Chair, I move policy option package 212 in accordance with LFO's recommendations.
Discussion? Objection? Not so moved.
The next recommendation from the Legislative Fiscal Office is to approve policy option package 213, agent referral fees, moving $95,940 other funds, limited to non-limited other funds. That package is also on page 2 of 8. This shifts the agent referral fees, which the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool has little or no control over, to the non-limited side of the budget, so they won't have to absorb that within their administrative costs.
Madam Chair, I'm move policy option package 213 in accordance with LFO recommendations.
Heard Representative Butler's motion. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved.
The next recommendation is to approve a reduction of $74, 1% in out-of-state travel.
These guys are more in line.
That's a nice bicycle that they've got in this department, right? For state travel.
Any other
non-agenda
co-chairs approve the 1%, I realize I probably should have made it 10% instead of 1%.
I was wondering if you dropped the decimal up.
I'd move the legislative fiscal recommendation of the 1% reduction in travel, Madam Chair.
Heard Representative Butler's motion. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
In accordance with the previous recommendations, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of a budget of $1,079,867 other funds, 7 positions, and 7 full-time FTE, or full-time equivalent positions for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool.
That's a new one.
Part-time FTE.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move that relative to the medical or medical insurance pool that we approve legislative fiscal recommendation at $1,079,867, 7 positions, 7 full-time equivalents.
Thank you, Representative Butler. We have the motion before us. Any discussion? Objection? If not, so moved. And now we will close the work session on Senate Bill 5507, Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5507. Is there any public testimony from anyone on any of the bills before us today? If not, we'll proceed with the public hearing on the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this budget starts on page 104 of your binder, and I'd like to introduce Sherry Thibault Harrell, who is the manager of the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Thibault Harrell, and I'm the administrator for the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business. And Debbie mentioned information is the second to the last tab in the notebook if you're not already there. And I'll just be talking about the highlights of this document. And I'll start on page 105 with the program purpose and description of services. The Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business administers certification programs that are designed to ensure that targeted businesses have equal access to contracting opportunities in the state. The office evaluates and processes requests for 3 types of certification. Our first certification program is the federally mandated Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. This certification program is for minority and women-owned businesses that are seeking contracting opportunities with recipients of federal transportation-related monies. And some of the recipients in this category in Oregon are Oregon Department of Transportation, TriMet, and the Port of Portland. Eligibility for this program is based on U.S. Department of Transportation regulations. And the office is audited annually by the Federal Highway Administration to ensure compliance with that program.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson.
Just so that I can follow the administrator's testimony, I apologize, I'm lost already. Why is it then, if you're doing this on behalf of ODOT, that ODOT replicates this effort inside ODOT? Why aren't you not the sole repository of minority women and emerging small businesses?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we are the sole certification authority in the state. Prior to 1987, I should back up. Each state has an authority to run the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. In Oregon, it is Oregon Department of Transportation. Prior to 1987, all jurisdictions, including ODOT, TriMet, Port Portland, City of Portland, did their own certification in their offices. And the 1987 legislature, in an effort to consolidate that process, formed this office, and we became an office in 1988. So ODOT does administer the DBE program, as does
Port of Portland and TriMet. They administer the compliance portion. They actually target the projects, and they ensure compliance when the firms are out working on these projects. But this office does certification, which is a separate function from what they do. We strictly accept applications, qualify the applicants, and we have an online directory in which these jurisdictions use to identify certified firms to participate.
Then help me again, because I've never been through this.
Okay.
Just your explanation appears that there's a lot of duplication. Convince me there's not.
No one else in the state does certification for these programs. We are the sole certification authority in the state for all minority and woman targeted programs. We do it for the City of Portland, Multnomah County, Metro, ODOT, TriMet, Port of Portland, and any other jurisdiction that targets.
I'm not asking my question very precisely.
Okay.
You're doing certification.
Yes.
Everybody else is doing compliance.
And targeting. They handle the programs.
That seems to be very fractured, and maybe I'm just too dumb to get it, but why not bring certification and compliance all into one place?
Why are we split up from ODOT?
I understand you're two different agencies. I'm asking.
Why isn't it just one?
Yes.
Well, actually, in 1999, the Federal Highway Administration passed a new law, and they have now actually gone along with what Oregon did 10 years ago and said there needs to be one sole certification authority in the state to do this. And that is actually to relieve burden on the applicants for having to apply to each jurisdiction separately. Prior to 1987, if you wanted to work for the City of Portland, you had to make application there. You had to make application at each jurisdiction, so we do one now.
I won't belabor the committee's time with this anymore. I need to come and talk to you because
okay,
I think we're speaking two different languages.
Okay.
I have Senator Duke's first question. Sorry.
I think you are speaking different languages. If I start a business and I want to be identified or qualified as a small, whatever the right
minority
term is,
or woman owned
yeah,
business.
Emergency,
yes.
Emerging
uh-huh.
business, I come to you.
That's correct.
And you make the determination that I qualify.
That is correct.
Then I can apply to ODOT or
anywhere.
Other agencies.
Yes, you can apply
when
anywhere.
They have, when they bid a contract, I can apply, and that's sort of like being a veteran. It gives you extra points. In bidding on the project.
Yes, and actually these projects that these people are bidding on are targeted. So when a jurisdiction puts out a contract, they identify that contract as having participation by a minority or woman or disadvantaged business enterprise.
And I know ODOT targets some contracts, some of the smaller contracts, specifically for women and minority-owned businesses. Believing that women and minority-owned businesses often don't have the capital or the equipment to be able to bid on the larger mm-hmm. contracts, so they often bid offer some of the smaller ones specifically for that. Having said that, I'm still not sure that you couldn't handle what ODOT is doing, or a good part of it. Do you pass money through to ODOT, or is your, I mean, you're receiving federal funds to do what you do. Do you pass money also through to them so that they can deal with the rest of it?
Madam Chair, Senator Duke, actually ODOT funds 68% of our office, and the office is funded 32% by other state agencies.
Okay, so the ICT money goes to ODOT first and then comes to you. Okay. And I have one other question. It falls under the category of somebody told me, so take it in that
okay.
in that vein. That there was a lawsuit, and I thought it was against ODOT, for the whole minority women business advantage. That and that whoever had filed the lawsuit had won. That there was a challenge to the whole program of giving a special advantage on highway projects to a certain class of people.
Madam Chair,
that you were sort of denying the others.
Yeah. I'm not aware of a specific challenge in Oregon, but there have been many. And actually, I'll give you a little rundown on that. back in 1988, there was a high-profile lawsuit called the Richmond versus Croson, and that was in the state of Virginia. And prior to 1987, the state of Oregon actually had a mandate at the state and local level that they needed to use a certain percentage, as well as at the federal level, which I should say, at the federal level, ODOT, TriMet, and Port of Portland are required by federal law to use around 10% participation of the certified firms. So there is a mandate at the federal level. That mandate at the state level was eliminated with that lawsuit in 1988. So jurisdictions in Oregon that are not mandated do so on a voluntary basis. So City of Portland, Multnomah County, Metro, the State of Oregon, all continued targeting, but don't have to.
And that would include state road fund projects that are used.
Including federal funds.
That use solely yes. state dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In
Chair,
yes.
Excuse me a second. I've just found out that the House convenes at 10.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is I'd like, Senator Dukes, I know you weren't totally through.
No, that's okay.
And I've
got a lot of information. And
Representative Butler, Representative Johnson, can you hold your
yes, ma'am.
Questions? And I know you'd like a few minutes before you go to the floor. So I think we're going to adjourn and continue with you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Great. Are you wanting to meet on Friday?
Oh. This is Thursday. I have a one thing I would really appreciate, I think we're going to have a lot of questions on this committee. Representative Butler is sitting here with one. Representative Johnson has some more, and I'm sure Senator Duke. If you have a chance at any time, if any of you have any openings to meet with you Friday before we start again Monday,
great.
Answer some of those questions. And one of mine will be, as actually, perhaps, if we could do like we're doing in the afternoon committee, of Representative Butler's, which she chairs, to submit some questions. Let's do that.
That would
give
be
them
great.
That
would be wonderful.
If you would check with LFO, Lori, will you collect the questions, any of you? Because I have questions as well, and I'll try to submit those to you so that Monday we can maybe go over those.
Sure.
Thank you very much, and I'll see you Monday. We are adjourned.